Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Well, guys, what a week of international football it's been so far.
He says that every international week.
I do tend to agree. But we're still in the international week. There's still playing. There's actually some Nations League.
Nations League.
Yep, there's some Nations League stuff still going on, and I pity the fool who doesn't like the Nations League.
Yeah.
It's been great, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is everything that it was promised to be. Not meaningless friendlies.
No. I was watching Germany-France game, although it ended 0-0, they were playing a game of football right till the end. Yeah. There was none of that slackening off towards the end, kind of going, all right, guys, friendly, 70, 80 minutes, let's calm down. And no large numbers of substitutions to mess up the rhythm of the game. Proper football matches that I've seen so far. I've seen three. They've all been proper.
Yeah, because France played again, didn't they? They played the Dutch, didn't they?
I did, as it happened. Yeah, I watched that as well, and that was a cracking game. I watched that game. I also watched the Greece-Estonia game while England were on the television. But I won't bore you with the reason why I watched that. Sorry, the Estonia-Greece game. But I did. All of these games were played like actual football matches, particularly the France-Netherlands game. But that was also the French homecoming after their World Cup win. It was the first home game
right after
the home cup World Cup. So there was a real atmosphere in the stadium. It was packed and it was full of the glories of France. And their team didn't let them down. In fact, both teams didn't let the occasion down as well, because the Netherlands, of course, got much to prove and played pretty well, actually, against a very, very good France team. Mm. And it all added up to an extremely entertaining football match. Mm.
So were you watching that thinking, man alive, look at them celebrating, being so happy that their team has come home? And you think, oh, that could have been us, couldn't it? If only a couple of things had gone our way, that could have been us.
I don't think we can celebrate in the same way that the French can. But then I don't think I've ever seen England football fans necessarily celebrating anything like that, because, you know, I wasn't born in 1966, so how on earth would I possibly know? Just the way that they attack their national anthem, because their national anthem is just so attackable.
It is.
Whereas our one is
significantly better than our one.
Yeah, our one is rubbish.
Our one is,
yeah,
is terrible.
Is rubbish. And yeah. I mean, you don't even have to be a patriot to have that opinion.
No.
I can think you can be a massive patriot and still have the opinion that our anthem's rubbish.
It is.
Particularly compared to the French.
Yes.
And as soon as it starts, they all just like go boom and they turn down the music.
Mm-hmm.
They started it off and then just turned on the music and just let the crowd just like continue to sing. It was quite rousing. It almost made me feel French.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. No sort of Alfie Beau lookalike coming out and leading on the crowd either.
No, and he would have cried off with a sore throat anyway.
Yeah, true enough. True enough.
Alfie Beau joke there, listeners.
Yeah.
One for the teenagers.
But of course, Jan, it wouldn't have been us, would it? Because, as we know, England are terrible at the moment, aren't they?
Well,
I don't even have to look at the press. I don't have to read opinion pieces about England. I know how terrible they are. They're in their worst run of games for 30 years. 3-0 years, listeners. That's how terrible this England side is.
You can prove anything with facts, though, can't you, Graham?
Yes.
So, and the truth is that two of those games, one of them was a meaningless one at the end of the World Cup. And, then they played against a very, very good Spain side and actually gave a good account of themselves. Sorry, you're wrong.
A meaningless game. I mean, I'm sorry, but excuse me, but how many lines did they have on their shirts in that game?
I don't think the number of lines should come into it.
Really? I mean, like, if there was one, if they were wearing a shirt with one line on it, then yeah, okay, take your foot off the gas a bit. I'm all right with that. When you pull on that shirt.
Yeah, every game's a three-line whip for England.
That was good.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm tired as well.
I know.
And I've still got this gold.
You really should have warned us about that one. That was.
I literally just made it up just a second, so I couldn't have warned you about it.
I might see if I can somehow re-record that bit later. With me saying it.
Oh, right. So,
oh, I see. Yeah.
Okay. Steal his thunder.
I still play yours. I don't mind.
But we haven't lost three games in a row since 1988, since Euro 88 even. And the previous time before that was 1985. And then before that, you've got to go to the 1950s.
When was the last time we beat a decent team, not on penalties?
Oh, blimey.
When was the last time we beat a decent team?
Well, people say, Sweden are a decent team, aren't they? Mm. They're number 12 in the world at the moment, aren't they?
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think that's what Terry was angling at, really.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's what
I meant.
You mean
a real decent team?
Yeah, I think I mean a proper decent
team. A FIFA top 10 team.
Yeah, I guess that's probably where I'm at, where I'm going.
And not a FIFA top 10 team that would have a couple of CONCACAFs in there.
Well, I don't know. Let's not be rude to the CONCACAFs. We were rude enough to the Americans. Have you noticed they've gone all quiet on social media about us after last week? That's because they've all gone after last week.
Hey, fake news.
Switzerland, perhaps. Whenever the last time we beat Switzerland. Maybe. Well, the last time we beat a decent team, not on penalties.
Well, we have to beat them this week. We're recording this on Monday night, and we play Switzerland tomorrow night. Is it Tuesday?
It is, yeah.
So just after this podcast will drop. And if we lose that, this will be our worst ever run, ever. England never, ever lost four games in a row.
Jan is full of mitigating circumstances.
Come on, mitigate away.
Well, like I said, fourth place playoff or third place playoff. I mean, that should...
But before you go any further, I'd like to introduce the listeners to a new section of our podcast called Loser Talk. Go ahead.
Doesn't really matter, does it? If you're not in the final, what's the point turning up? And we clearly didn't turn up. So I don't think that one counts at all. I mean, it counts as a game of football of sorts.
Yeah.
So dead rubber.
So I just to put that in amongst that, we haven't done three in a row since 88. Right. It's that one doesn't count.
Okay. Well, if you lose that one, then okay, I'll give you that one for this time. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we've still lost three of our last five games and only won one of them.
Allow me to jump in the defence of my colleague here. As long as my colleague doesn't mind me jumping in.
Jump away. Jump around.
If we were talking about the last five qualifying games, then it would definitely be Southgate out. But these were different games.
Yeah.
World Cup games.
Yeah.
Massively important games, full of drama and narrative and emotion and stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't take anything away from the fact that despite the fact that we only beat teams that we were comfortably better than, we did get to the semi-final. And that, I think, allows Southgate quite a lot. I think we're going to have to lose quite a few more games before Southgate is sacked. Yeah.
So maybe I am being a bit impish here with my...
You're being a bit disingenuous.
No, I think what I'm being is I'm trying to be populist. I'm trying to come out with some sizzling anti-takes for people to get riled about on a podcast. Isn't that what podcasts are meant to be about?
That is indeed what podcasts are supposed to do, yeah.
Everyone else is doing it. Why can't we?
Because everyone else is doing it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's why we've been on the air for 10 years.
Yeah, that's why it's written up at the top of the wall there in big letters, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't do what everyone else does. Mm. Yeah, okay, fine. All right, but what I'm saying is where you end up in the World Cup perhaps isn't a fair reflection of actually how good you are.
That's right. That's what the rest of the world have been telling us since June.
So,
and only now are we actually starting to listen.
Have we really been that deluded? Did we really think we were good?
I think it's fair to say that England overachieved.
Yeah.
And that's probably a nice way of putting it.
Yes.
And so deluded's probably a bit unkind. But we overachieved. And
I like the fact that we were whipped up into a frenzy, though.
Yeah, we were.
And we got carried away.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, exactly.
I don't think we got deluded.
No.
But we did get carried away, which is not the same thing.
Otherwise, I'd have said deluded. Thing either, is it?
No. Not in the World Cup. It's you don't get carried away in a way. If you get to the semi final of the World Cup, it doesn't matter how you got there. You're entitled to get carried away.
But do you think people also got carried away about with teams that didn't do so well, like teams like Spain or Germany? Do you think people got carried away with thinking, oh my God, this team's useless now?
Yeah, well, that's what World Cups do, though, isn't it? When you fall down on a world stage like that, or you do well on the world stage like that, then it's amplified, isn't it? So, yeah, are Germany as bad as their World Cup performance? Probably not.
Definitely
Spain?
Not. Yeah.
Probably not. Well, definitely not, as we saw the other night. But I think England were probably worthy of their run. And I thought when they played Spain on Saturday, I thought they gave a really good game. And I thought the performance was pretty good, considering the quality of the opposition.
So really, I can't actually do any of this material I prepared earlier about the possible replacements for Gareth Southgate.
We could do that anyway. We can talk about it. Yeah, if you want
it
to.
Seems a bit hollow now.
Well, let's go through the looking glass. Let's just assume. Let's say because it could only be three or four games away. It could happen. Lose tomorrow, albeit in a friendly. You know, no one's going to get sacked for that. Not unless Gareth is being secretly filmed with large glasses of liquid, not wine. It was established it wasn't wine, but liquid, talking, you know, about stuff.
Why don't they serve up in wine bottles then?
Well, it wasn't wine.
Okay.
Apparently it wasn't wine. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's not important.
What are you talking
about? Sam Allardyce, when he was done, the talk was that he was drinking from a very large pint glass of wine. No one drinks pints of wine, not even Big Sam. Anyway, I digress. We have a bad Nations League and we finished bottom of that group. We're going into the qualification period. People are going to be nervous. Because we're going to have the qualification period. Then, you know, that's when it becomes, you know, even more important. So it's not out of the question that we could, this time next year, be talking about a New England coach. Mm.
Also, as well, in defence, and this is where facts can also come and help you, the ones I mentioned there earlier, the three defeats in a row, 88 and 85,
right,
both under Bobby Robson, and they knighted him, didn't they?
Yeah, he was the greatest England manager of all time, apart from Sir Ralph Rambin.
Yeah, so maybe losing three games in a row isn't so bad, because it all works out in the end.
Yeah. I mean, there are games and there are games, aren't there? There are rickets and there are rickets. Boris Karius' rickets in the Champions League ended his career, effectively.
Yes.
You know, Hugo Lloris' ricket in the World Cup final, no worries.
No worries
at all. Didn't happen. Did happen, but didn't happen. So it's all context. And at the moment, you know, Gareth's done so much good work with that squad that the fact that it's currently a losing team is, you know, by the by. I think everyone buys into what he's trying to do, or at least people are buying. A lot of people have bought into what he's trying to do. He's still got time to work it out.
Yeah.
And we have been playing good teams. And England are one of them teams, I think, that beats teams that are ranked lower than them.
Yes.
But doesn't beat teams that are ranked higher than them. It's almost as though the FIFA rankings were somehow a fair reflection on the abilities of the team, which they're not, as we know. Everybody knows that the FIFA rankings are nonsense.
Just England are very respectful of them. Because English people like rules, listeners. And they look at that and they just go, well, we shouldn't be beating these chaps, should we? So let's just give them the respect they deserve and just ease off a bit.
Fantastic half-time performance, lads. Absolutely thrilled. 3-0 up. Couldn't be happier. However, Spain are 6 points above. I really don't think. They're just ease back a bit, old man. Just ease back, you know. Just a couple of rickets.
One thing that got us two-thirds of the Earth's surface, and that's respect for rules.
It's just not cricket.
The beauty of it is that hopefully the Nations League is meant to get rid of coefficients, isn't it? Or meant to be a fairer system of it.
It helps us with the coefficients.
Yes.
When I say us, I mean UEFA. I'm now speaking as a European, or rather I'm speaking as the supporter of a country that is part of UEFA. That's not the same thing. You get more points in the FIFA rankings according to the importance of the fixture that you play. And the reason why the Nations League was brought in, Graham, we're kind of right, is because it was to stop teams from gaming the system, from playing friendly matches like what Poland did.
Yes.
Yeah. So now they have to play competitive fixtures. Can you get more points for that? But what it will also mean is that UEFA teams will be more likely to populate the top 10 rankings, FIFA rankings, and therefore be better placed in international tournaments because they play more competitive fixtures than CONMEBOL and CONCACAF. Maybe not CONCACAF, because CONCACAF play a lot of this Gold Cup stuff, which I genuinely don't understand what's going on there with that. So I wouldn't be surprised, actually, if we see other confederations adopting the Nations League format, because I think actually it is going to be a successful tournament, as we kind of said that it would be.
Yeah, well, of course, we have been part of it since day one, haven't we?
Yeah, I think we're kind of vindicated. The The format is convoluted, but
yeah,
it's been fun to watch.
It has been fun to it's been fun to read the opinions and about it as well, and to see all the different news outlets actually trying to explain it. Did you get a wall chart at all about how it was going to go? I don't know.
I didn't get a wall chart. No,
there hasn't been a wall built that's big enough for a Nations League wall chart. Trump is going to need to build his wall before, and the first thing that we do when he builds that wall, we're going to go over there and we're going to put the Nations League wall chart up there.
It's going to be quite expensive in paper as well, and paste. It's going to take forever
to figure out how it works as well.
There's a monastery somewhere in northern France. Lots of seamstresses going blind, putting out this huge long roll of the Nations League wall chart.
I think that's exactly what's happening.
Centuries from now, archaeologists will argue over these odd pictograms. Some radical lunatic will be saying it had something to do with a sporting event, but actually everyone in mainstream thinking thought it was a prophecy for the end of the world.
This man is the king, for he is wearing the waistcoat.
Here the king is suffering arrows.
From some podcast, memory of which has long been forgotten. Yeah, but it has been quite fun to see how people are now suddenly trying to explain it when it's on top of us. I saw a great thread the other day on Twitter. Someone came up with a great conspiracy theory about how you could end up deliberately losing games in qualifying to get an easier route through in the Euros now, because obviously if you win your group in the Nations League, you get a chance of getting into a playoff to go into the tournament. So even if you're in the bottom rung of football in Europe, you've still got a chance of getting there. Mm. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
That's the whole part of the whole reason why it's such a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it allows the smaller nations the opportunity, one, to be able to play two up front if they want to, rather than be compelled to play 10 behind the ball. They can actually try balanced tactics, try winning football matches, because they're going to be playing similarly matched teams. Mm. It also means they get to have a crack at those playoffs and get into the European Championship.
Yeah, so, Luxembourg got a 4-0 win, didn't they, at the weekend?
I'll take your word for it. This is the team that drew 0-0 with the world champions, only what, last year?
Well, yes,
so,
indeed.
You know, there is something to be said. I don't know what they're putting in the water in Luxembourg.
Tax evasion.
I was about to say buffeting, but
well, yes. You always do.
You can look that up, listeners. It isn't rude, I promise you.
I was afraid to ask what that was, because I thought it might be rude.
Luxembourgish beer, and it's delicious.
All right.
Buffeting is it's very, very nice. I shared a flat with two Luxembourg guys.
All right.
Who were suspiciously skint most of the time. I never believed a word of it.
No,
sorry, could you spot me a tenner, please? And I'm like, no, you're from Luxembourg. Spot me a tenner. I didn't have a tenner. It was the 90s. No one had tenners in the 90s.
That's very true.
That was like a year's pay back then, wasn't it?
But even in the 90s, we didn't lose three games in a row.
That's also perfectly true.
Yeah.
That's also perfectly true.
And look at the rogues gallery of managers we had back then.
Cool. But you're right. I mean, yes, conceivably, if you've won your Nations League group, you can say, well, look, do you know what? Let's just take our chances with the playoffs. Because we're only talking about, what is it? I guess it would be, what, two or three or four games, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or maybe if they're two-legged playoffs. So you're talking four games. Mm. But of course, you've got to be on point for all four of those games. You don't want to. You can't mess it up. So I think that if you, I said this right all the way back, because I mean, one of the drawbacks that you rightly put forward was that, in fact, what could happen is that they could game it so that they could get relegated and therefore give them a better chance of finishing top of the group and getting a playoff spot. And I think, yes, that's a possibility that they could do that. But I think that any football association or manager or group of players that deliberately throws games in front of their own fans has got bigger problems than qualifying for Euro 20 for the next European Championships. So, you know.
There ain't a waistcoat thick enough that's going to stop those arrows coming at you.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone can get away with that. So,
mind you, that makes a great panel for last panel for our tapestry, doesn't it?
It does. It does. If only we knew someone who was good at drawing those kind of things.
Someone who's actually really actually made a stab at doing a tapestry before.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sure we know someone who's done that, but his name escapes me.
No, drawn a complete blank there, I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But hey, look, we've got more Nations League coming up, haven't we, next month and the month after. So this is really nicely compact tournament, isn't it? But yeah, we do have a friendly. These so-called promises, you know, that we got from Europe about, you know, no more meaningless friendlies. What's happening?
We've got a meaningless friendly in Leicester.
Of all places.
But it might not be meaningless because, obviously, as I've mentioned before, if we lose it.
Record breaking.
Yeah. That's something big, an albatross shaped to hang around his neck.
Isn't that where Richard III met his sticky end? You could be finding Gareth Southgate in some supermarket car park in 1,000 years. the curvature of his spine and the waistcoat that's still intact. I'd say this is probably a former England manager.
She has the classic hooked nose of the Southgates.
I didn't really plan for this episode to turn into an episode of Time Team. The goal. Now, I watched the England game. And you watched the England game as well, didn't you?
I did.
Now, we were quite unlucky to lose that, do you think?
If you're talking about the goal in the last minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think of that goal?
Well, the ball was played in, I think it came off Ramos and span up in the air.
Ramos,
so there's some justice there. It span up in the air, and De Gea went to gather it. Danny Welbeck
caught it midair, didn't he?
He caught it midair. He was airborne.
Airborne.
And he was kind of over the shoulders of Danny Welbeck. He dropped the ball on the way down.
Yep.
And it fell to Danny Welbeck's feet. He spun around and put it in the net.
Yes.
That's what happened.
Yes.
Goal.
And it was celebrated. The little score in the left-hand corner clicked over to 2-2. Everyone was happy.
It certainly did, yeah.
It would have been a completely different narrative after that.
It would have been.
But the referee went and had a word with his colleague on the line and decided, no, we're not giving that.
Yeah,
that
right in front of the guy who looks at the goal line as well, wasn't it? It was within 2 yards of him, wasn't it, when it all happened?
Right.
What do you think? Goal? No goal?
I can see why he didn't give it. I'm not sure if it was given for the foul on the goalkeeper or as Welbeck made his way through the two retreating defenders, whether he was seen to have impeded one of them. But if it's just about the goalkeeper, for me, I think it should have stood. And I'm not just saying that because I would have liked to have seen it end 2-2. But I don't think that's a foul on the keeper.
I think
the keeper fell over Welbeck and dropped the ball. And that's as... But I can, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the ref got it wrong.
Mm.
I can see why he didn't give it. And, you know, he can only give it on what he saw, not what he thought he saw. And, you know, what he thought he saw was clearly someone being impeded. So
I think the ref got it right. I think it was definitely a foul. I don't think it was a foul. This is interesting. I don't think it was a foul. I don't think Welbeck did anything to intentionally foul De Gea. But De Gea did have two hands on the ball and did have control of the ball.
Right.
And when he lands on top of Danny Welbeck.
Yeah.
And the process of landing on him and falling over him drops the ball. I think he's got control of the ball, and in those situations the ball should be effectively dead. If he'd just fallen and dropped the ball and not had contact with another player, yeah, fine. But because he's had contact with an opposition player, I think that's how my interpretation of how the game should be played. Interesting point is the fact that it's pretty much like one of the very oldest rules of football, or some variations of football, the fair catch.
Right.
Which was a rule that was within the original set of laws that was set up back in 1863. So it is almost like that, well, you get a fair catch. The only player now that can catch a ball fairly, obviously, is a goalkeeper now.
Yeah.
But it's the one thing that goes back all the way to that early version of football. And I do think that if a goalkeeper has a hold of it, and you always hear commentators going on about, oh, yeah, goalkeepers are so overprotected these days. The trouble is they've been protected like that for decades. And the pundits that are saying this, oh, goalkeepers are overprotected these days, they were just as protected since before those were born. Mm. Everyone goes back to the 1958 Cup Final.
I was going to say, how much of that then is these individual filmed incidents where Yeah. You know, goalkeepers are rugby tackled and then carried over the line grasping hold of the ball, and the referee gives a goal and off we go again.
Yeah, of course. But of course, if that was the norm, we wouldn't remember it.
We wouldn't remember it.
I know, but that's what's become in the collective consciousness, is that's what was happening in the 60s, 70s and 80s.
That was fine back in the 50s. Yeah, that was what... But of course, it wasn't fine in the 50s, because if it was fine, no one would have spoken about it. It wouldn't have batted an eyelid about the fact that Nat Loftus bundled the goalkeeper into the back of the net. And this is, what, 60 years ago, long before most pundits and commentators were born. It just seems weird that this was one of these things that seems to be going over and over and over. But, I mean, for as long as I can remember, I don't think that goalkeepers are any more protected now than they have been at any stage.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Mm. Yeah.
And I've been watching football for a long time.
No, you have. I can certainly verify that you have been watching football for a long time. When you put it like that, I am inclined to agree with you. I didn't watch the good football match, and so I only saw a clip of it. But, I mean, my first reaction was, that's bollocks. But I'm an England fan, and so I guess my first reaction is likely to be anything other. But usually what happens is that I watch it a few more times, and then I think, well, actually, you know, that was probably fair. It's a bit like the Palace-Liverpool game, where at the time I thought that it was complete rubbish, and actually looking at it again, you think, oh, fair enough then.
Yeah.
Have your stupid goal and your stupid 3 points, stupid Liverpool. But I'm struck by what you've said about that kind of tradition of looking after and protecting goalkeepers, and its kind of lineage in the... You know, the fact that goalkeepers, not sacrosanct so much, but the fact that they are the only player on the pitch that's entitled to handle the ball in open play, and that that gives them a certain special status, and that perhaps instinctively referees understand this.
Mm. I think as well, though, when you, there's a difference between two outfield players going up to challenge an aerial ball, in that they can protect their bodies with their arms as against any impact, whereas a goalkeeper doesn't have that. You know, he has to. He's reaching with at least one arm, so he's exposing one of his sides. And generally, in this case, he had both arms in the air, so he can't. He needs some kind of protection, because otherwise, you know, he is going to get hurt. He can't defend himself.
This is very true,
and it also lends a lie to the excuse of, "Oh, you need your arms to jump," because you never see a goalkeeper swinging their elbows out when they jump up in the air.
You don't. We take out his own defence when he did it. So,
find some peculiar analysis of goalkeeping. I know we touched on this with our goalkeeping podcast, but I can't remember the match, but I remember a pundit criticising a goalkeeper for not being able to jump up and catch a ball when a striker was jumping up to head it.
Yeah.
And completely ignoring the fact that the striker in question had at least 10 yards run up.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper was just a couple of foot off of his line and had nowhere to run. And so was jumping up to get, and only just missed out on the ball, in fact, after all of that. And I thought, well, you know, that's going to happen. You know, I mean, in fact, if anything, the goalkeeper, thinking about it, probably should have been given a free kick for being fouled. But, I mean, there is some odd people. I've said this at the time, and I'll say it again. Then we need more goalkeeper analysts in our TV media to explain to us how goalkeeping works.
But of course, they're always going to be outnumbered.
That's true, and they're all in the union as well.
Yeah, of course, they're all unionised.
Goalkeepers union. Yeah. Oh, you and your goalkeepers union.
Yeah.
But you mean I'm a goalkeeper and I understand how goalkeeping works?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, I'm in a union.
And of course, they'll probably bring up demarcation so they can't talk about anything else other than goalkeeping.
Yeah. What would you know if you were a goalkeeper?
Yeah, they'll talk to other goalkeepers talking about other stuff, call them a scab.
You're talking about outfield players.
Yeah.
Get out.
Get out.
Sorry, mate, that seat's taken.
Yeah. Well, even if you haven't got a goalkeeping pundit, you've got to have an empty seat for one. That's what the goalkeeper union
does.
Yeah, that's what they get. Yeah.
Of course, you realise it means a lot more work for David Priest, because I think he's the only active goalkeeper pundit in existence right now. He seems to be absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, David Icke, isn't it?
David, now you're talking. They should do a podcast, those two. Ike and Preecy.
We should get David Ike on here.
Preecy and the Ike.
We should definitely get him on here.
I bet he's been on a couple of podcasts you listen to.
He has been on most of them.
listeners may not know, but Dan has a particularly eclectic taste in podcasts, which is probably one of the reasons why he's stuck around here for so long. You must feel like you're almost on first name terms with David Icke and the number of guest appearances he's made on ones that you listen
to. It's funny with David Icke, and someone said to him that, you know, these lizards you keep talking about, like, the, you know, this person's a lizard, this person's a lizard. We know what you're saying, really. You're being anti-Semitic, aren't you? This is you're saying one thing and meaning another. And he went, no, I really think they're lizards. And the interview is just, okay.
It's not a metaphor, mate.
It's not a metaphor.
We're talking actual lizards.
We're talking about lizards.
Skinned scales, yes. The works.
Lizards, fork tongues.
Fork tongues, everything. Yeah. No, actual fork tongues, yeah. Not metaphorical.
Anyway, I heard that. What? I thought it might make you laugh. Yeah. Well, and I did hear that in a podcast, actually.
Well, if you've got his number, then get him. And also, listen, if you know where we can get hold of David Icke and get some of his opinions purely on goalkeeping, rather than the lizard people, because I think you know, well, the internet's already well served with his opinions on lizard people.
Yeah, we want the number for his goalkeeping agent, not his lizard agent.
Well, I presume he has a different agent for those two. I'm
assuming so. Yeah.
I'll call him up. Yeah. So how much is it just to talk about goalkeeping? All right, okay. But if I chucked in another tenner, could you talk about lizards as well? No, the other two are cool with it. They're absolutely cool with it. It's fine.
I do like the fact that when he does go to talks and things like that, and there are people in the crowd, that he still gets asked about football, which is great, because like, when he's around there with a load of conspiracy nuts, and then all of a sudden there'll be someone who just wants to know what it was like to be in such and such a team playing with such and such a player.
A bit like when Will Shatner gets asked about Star Trek.
As opposed to being asked about
all the other stuff that he does. He does tons of stuff.
TJ Hooker.
Come on, let's not get... No, man. So you're not... Well, let's not go into this. Shatner is a busy man.
We've done it all tonight, haven't we?
We have been everywhere.
Richard III, lizard people.
Yeah.
We did say we'd do a weekend box set last weekend, but we didn't in the end because I went to the cricket.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. There is a full card of league fixtures coming out this weekend.
Dortmund v Frankfurt is the obvious thing that I would say.
We've got Spurs Liverpool on the lunchtime game on Saturday.
During Hamburg v Heidenheim from the Bundesliga 2. So if you listen to our Tim Capel podcast, you're now across the Bundesliga
2. Did BT Sport go a weekend without showing Hamburg now?
No, because they've got these Bundesliga 2 games, and now they've got Hamburg. They can go, oh, we'll just like put Hamburg on, because they will get two or three extra listeners to the ones that they have. Everton v West Ham. Now, there's an interesting fixture. Mm. I mean, largely because West Ham is just such a complete car crash. Only Palace is ever so slightly closer to the car crash that is West Ham.
Will this be potentially seven straight defeats for them? Is it six?
At Goodison, I would put money on Everton to win that football match, I've got to say. And they just appear to be in complete disarray, West Ham. They're a bit like Hamburg, aren't they? Not maybe in terms of profile, but in terms of decisions that have been made over a succession of years. Every time they do something, it just seems to make things worse.
Yeah.
Looking at what Sunderland have been through, do you look at West Ham and think, that looks familiar?
No, I don't think... I mean, a lot said about their ownership, but I don't think they're as carefree as Ellis Short was. He had the wrong people advising him, and he was living in London and expecting people just to be spending his money wisely. And I think that the ownership at West Ham are genuinely do want to get it right, and they've got boots on the ground. They're actually there. So I think it is a little bit different. I don't think that West Ham could fall as far and as fast as Sunderland. I think that's a different situation.
And West Ham start, okay, it's been bad, but is it any worse than Palace's start last season?
No, it's not as bad as Palace's start last season. I mean, that's not much consolation, though, is it?
And they stayed up.
They did, that's true, but, I mean,
They had a change manager.
And they had
Will Starhard to come into the side.
Exactly. And in an ideal world, you don't really want to be in that position.
No.
I don't think that's much comfort for West Ham fans.
No, but, hey, if you like a nice bit of car crash football, then you can really tune into Everton West Ham at 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Rubbernecker TV there.
And if you want to read our hot takes on the best seven matches on TV, get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball.
And if you want to get in touch with us, then we will be leaving contact details after the show, as always, during the little musical bit. We're either on Facebook and we're on Twitter. We've got an Instagram, which Jan runs, and a Facebook group, which, again, Jan keeps an eye on. So do please reach out to us. Thanks very much to those people who've left us five-star reviews, and particularly those who left very generous reviews as well. We had a few of those. I should have written them down. Some podcasts read out the reviews and name-check the people who lead them. Oh, but we figured that you'd be a bit too embarrassed.
Our listeners are heroes.
Yes.
They do what they do, not for praise. They just do it because that's how heroic they are. The ones who leave us five-star reviews.
I mean, the rest of you, we'd rather not comment on. Yes. But, I mean, like those of you that do, then you are heroes, Sound of Football heroes. And I have never known a Sound of Football hero banging on our door at Sound of Football sales and saying, "Where are my kudos?" It just doesn't happen.
No.
So if you want to join that band of heroes, a very exclusive club right now, it should be said, then please do consider a five-star review on your Apple Podcasts or whatever loser aggregator that you also use.
But that's all we've got time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Fenn, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Right, okay, that's it.
He's got to go.
He has got it. He's had enough.
Got to go.
He's had enough time, hasn't he?
He's had enough time, yeah. What's he got to show, eh? Fourth place.
Fourth place, what's that?
What colour medal do you get for fourth place?
You don't get a medal for that, Graham.
No, exactly.
So it's no colour.
It's blank.
It's blank, yeah. It's empty. You get nothing, you just get sent home.
Yeah. See, we got takes.
We got takes.
We got takes.